Welcome to Success Genius, the only podcast for ambitious entrepreneurs who are serious about transforming their productivity game. I'm your host, Master Certified Life Coach and Yogi, Neil Williams, and I believe that true productivity doesn't come from more hours in the office, but from the mindsets and habits that leverage your maximal focus and energy. On this podcast, we'll dive deep into next-level habits, mindset shifts, and unique practices like yoga nidra. But we're steering clear of any band-aid solutions and time-wasting fads. You won't hear me talk about quick fixes, hacks, and trendy apps that promise the world and deliver nothing. Let's be real. How many planners and time management systems have you bought that are either collecting digital or literal dust? You and I both know these don't work. This show is all about the simple, everyday, high-impact practices validated by neuroscience and psychology, because as it turns out, your body is as pivotal to your productivity as your mind. So if you want to get 40 hours of work done in 10, stick around. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm Neil Williams, and this is the Success Genius Podcast. Welcome to episode 222. Okay, on this one, I wanted to talk about workflows and how you can use them to get more done in less time with a behavior economics concept called nudges. So specifically, we will dive into what a workflow is and how it's different from doing actual work. We're going to identify the typical workflow buckets for an online business. And then I'm going to go into several different ways that you can use this idea of nudges for more efficient workflows. So if you find yourself or your team spending way more time talking about work instead of actually doing work, this episode is for you. And I wanted to use this episode as a way to frame up how you can get workflows built more easily using AI. Next week, Rick Mulready and I have a really fun and interesting discussion about all the ways that you can use AI tools to do this for you. When I was in the corporate world, I often had this experience where we would be in a meeting and we would spend 2 hours or oftentimes more than that talking about things. And we talk and talk and talk, and it just felt like this circle, and there were not many, if any, decisions that were made. And really, all that time spent didn't move us towards any projects or goals being achieved. And when I look back at my corporate experience, I realize one of the main things that created an environment where there was low performance, inefficiency, and low productivity was that there was just too much time spent talking about work and not enough time actually doing work. And in fact, I think this is probably what happened in, I've referenced this study on the podcast before, but I think it was a Harvard study that was done where they looked at a group of corporate employees and they analyzed how much time they actually spent doing work out of their 40-hour work week. And it came to about 12 hours per week. So there was about 12 hours that were spent like actually doing work. And then the rest of the time was spent talking about work or about other things, right? So what I wanted to talk about on this podcast was the difference between work, actually doing work, and workflows, and how we use these together to create optimized performance, high efficiency, and high productivity within ourselves, and also if you're someone who is leading or managing a team within your teams. Okay, so the first thing we need to talk about is kind of to have a working definition of the difference between work and workflows. I also, incidentally, I just want to mention again, I'm framing this episode so that you have a way to think about the difference between these two things as we go into next week's episode with Rick, where we're talking about how do we leverage AI tools to help us with our workflows, make them more efficient and for higher productivity and profit. Okay, so the working definition that we are going to use about work is that it's the tasks themselves and the effort that they require. So this is like applying cognitive value to information to produce something, right? This is really more about personal productivity and performance. So the way that we do our best work to optimize our own personal performance is by making sure that we understand when we are biologically primed to do the hard, challenging cognitive work and when's the best time of day for us to do creative work and really setting ourselves up for success in that way. But it also has to do with autonomy, purpose, and drive. So our optimal motivation will not be achieved unless we have autonomy. And in fact, if you're listening to this podcast and you came from the corporate world, one of the reasons you may have come from the corporate world to do your own thing is because you felt a lack of autonomy, right? Autonomy is vitally important in order to drive motivation. And motivation drives performance and results, okay? So work is the tasks themselves and the effort that they require. Whereas workflow is really about how those tasks are approached, organized, and completed. And honestly, the workflow can either help or hinder individual performance in getting work done. So what I mean by this is if you are leading a team, let's say, or even for yourself, this could be true. But let's just take the example of you leading a team and you notice that you get 1 billion questions and you have to answer those questions in order for a piece of work to be completed, then the workflow is probably inefficient, right? Because the workflow should be designed in a way that answers all the questions before they even happen, where there's not confusion, so that the amount of communication about the work is really minimized. That would be the goal of an optimized and efficient workflow. And incidentally, I want to just mention this study. I think I mentioned this in a prior podcast, but Rescue Time is an app that you can install on your computer that will track what you're working on. So it'll track all the different sites that you go to and how long you stay on them and all that kind of thing. Anyways, they do a study and the study found that the average time, so average means 50% of the people spent on average, people are spending 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, they would go to Slack or email. Isn't that crazy? So that just gives us an indication of how inefficient we are because we're spending so much time communicating about work rather than actually just diving in and doing the work. Now, also with this study, the mode of that was 1 minute. So the mode is the most frequent result that they saw was that with every 1 minute, people were going to Slack or to email. So if that is happening inside your organization, then really what that means, or you yourself are doing this, there is probably cognitive overload. There's probably confusion and there's probably overwhelm. So what people are trying to do is they're trying to reduce their overwhelm, get questions answered because they don't know either the direction that they're supposed to go, they are unclear on their purpose or their goals, or something is breaking down. Or there's just been a habit that's been established where people think that you are the ultimate supreme answer machine, right? So there's been some sort of training that has created a habit inside your organization that is all your employees go to you for the answer. And there is no answer that exists outside of the one that comes from your brain. Okay? So workflows are really designed to help tackle and solve those problems. Ideally, if a workflow is set up well, it is like the bumpers that guide people and allow for both trust and autonomy to happen within the organization. So the trust is the leader trusts that the work is going to be done in the way that it needs to in terms of quality and delivering on deadlines and all of that because the workflow has those bumpers built in. But it also allows for autonomy. So within the bumpers, then the person who is doing that work has the ability to do it in the way that allows them to have their highest performance. That could be during certain times of day or in the way that really fits with their own way of optimizing their personal performance. Okay, so that's the difference between work and workflows. Workflows, again, are about how those tasks are approached, organized, and completed. And I think really important to understand that the completed part to that, okay? How do we get a work product from start to finish? And how do we do it in the most efficient way? Okay. So I also wanted to, again, I'm framing this up so that when we talk next week with Rick, you will have the ability to have this kind of as background information, and you'll be able to better utilize AI to help you build in these workflows and build efficiencies in them. Okay. I'm going to give you some ideas on this podcast, but we go much more in depth to it next week. So the next thing I wanted to just point out is that, at least for an online business, which is where many of you are coming from, this is true of any business, but for online businesses, there's basically about four buckets of workflows that we would have. In fact, I started to list these out for myself. And when you sit down and you look at it, if you start to make a list of your own workflows in your business, do not let yourself get into cognitive overload and overwhelm. There's going to be quite a few. Okay. And it's fine, which is the reason why I wanted to have Rick back and help us think about, okay, there's a lot of these. How do I start to set them up in a way that I don't get overwhelmed, where it doesn't, like, I think it's such a big project that I just give up on it. Okay. So I'm going to first just think about help you organize them into the different buckets. So there is marketing that our businesses are responsible for, right? That's one of the main mechanisms within our business. And we'll have workflows under that marketing bucket. Now, what are those? They could be things like Facebook ads. They could be weekly emails. They could be nurture email sequences, landing pages, social media posts, podcasts, YouTube. All of those would probably fall under the marketing bucket, okay? Marketing workflows. Now, a second bucket of workflows that we typically have in an online business, or I think marketing and selling are pretty universal across businesses. Selling is the next one, okay? So examples might be a workflow for calls, a workflow for webinars, for email sales sequences, for sales pages, for offers, programs, and products. I don't know about you, but I think one of the most important skills that we have as entrepreneurs, and I think this is a really challenging one and a lot of us struggle with it, including myself, is creating offers, right? Offers are really like make or break our business. And so having an actual workflow that allows you or someone else on your team to create offers is one of the ways that you can basically, like, make sure your business stays efficient and profitable for the rest of time. Those offers will probably change over time. You'll have an offer that will work great for a while, and then it won't work great, and then you'll create a new offer. But having that skill means you never go hungry. Okay, so we have a marketing bucket. We have the selling bucket. We also have the fulfillment bucket. So this is how you deliver what you do to your clients or your students or your customers. So this might be an onboarding workflow, a communication workflow. How do you communicate them? Is it with Slack? Is it with email? Is it with calls? You might be super boundaried with your clients and you don't have any of that except for the scheduled calls. Renewals, tracking client progress towards certain goals or targets that they hired you for. So fulfillment is also a really important bucket and would have multiple different workflows, most likely underneath of it, depending on the type of offer that you have or the offer that you're fulfilling on. Operations is the fourth main bucket. And so this could be things like team meetings, if you have a team. Yes, team meetings would be probably a workflow that you have, right? Internal communications, how do you communicate with each other internally? Someone might be in charge of actual workflows. So you could have a workflow for workflows, right? Projects and also external communication. So maybe you have customer service team. And so you have some ways of handling issues or questions that come up. Okay, so operations would be another bucket. So next week, you'll notice that I talk with Rick about this and he has a specific order that he likes to think about these workflows, which I really like. So when you come back next week, you can hear how he thinks about that. But also, most importantly, what we talk with him about is how to make building these workflows faster and more efficient with the use of AI. Okay. So right now, what you might do is you might, in preparation for next week's episode, if you really want to dive into AI and figure out how to use it efficiently to help yourself with your workflows, is to just take the marketing bucket, the selling bucket, the fulfillment bucket, and the operations bucket, and just quickly jot down what are all of the workflows that would be underneath each one of those categories. So you have an idea of what those look like, okay? Okay, so the last thing that I wanted to cover in this episode, besides just understanding the difference between work and workflows, and then what are the types of workflows that we typically have in an online business, is how we can use something called nudges, N-U-D-G-E-S, to really make efficient workflows. And again, I wanted to do this so that when you're thinking about using AI to build them, you have these ideas in mind when you go through and you use like a ChatGPT, let's say, to assist you in this. The whole idea is that we want to prioritize more time, focused, peak productive and peak creative time on executing work instead of communicating about it. This is like email. Think about email. It was so funny. My CFO and I were having this conversation this week. We have such great conversations. Sometimes I think I should do a podcast that is just me and Mark having conversations about business because I really feel like they're so deep and robust. So anyways, we were talking about this in our call that both he and I have had the experience of really PTSD from Slack. Maybe you have had this too. Like when you hear, I don't have this on anymore, but he said he used to have like the Slack notification on and he can still hear it in his brain. And if he calls that sound up in his brain, he literally will cringe. And so I think that's really telling, right? It's saying a lot about how we're feeling about Slack communication and email communication. And really what I want to do is give you some ideas on how you can start to reduce that communication within your organization so that you can take the time that you're paying for those brilliant brains to be working for you to actually be doing work instead of talking about it. Okay. And so I'm going to give you some specific examples of how we can use this idea of nudges to make these workflows more efficient, reduce the amount of time talking about or communicating about work, and increasing the amount of time actually doing the work. So Nudges is an actual book. There's a book by this name, and the authors are Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. I highly, highly recommend the book. It's really amazing. They go into some very specific examples of how we can use nudges and how they have been used to solve some social types of problems. Again, I think it's very worthwhile read, but I'm going to give you some of my favorite ones to use in terms of workflows. So the first thing that I want to talk about is decision-making nudges. So there's something called choice architecture, and I'm not going to go too in-depth to that about this idea. You can do a deep dive into it in the book. But what we want to do is we want to use choice architecture to reduce cognitive overload. So think about this. If I gave you the choice of working on, let's say, 10 projects, what would happen? If I just said, okay, here are your 10 projects, you get to pick which one you want to work on. Your brain would probably start to go into a little bit of overload. You're like, wait a minute, first of all, I have 10 projects that I'm supposed to do. That seems completely impossible, right? That's too much to do. I don't have enough time. What happens if we're not careful in how we create the choice architecture inside of our organizations? It's very easy for the brains who are working in our organizations to go into cognitive overload and overwhelm. And that is one of the things that will derail performance and productivity and efficiency faster than anything else. So instead, what you might do, and this is something that we do, is you highlight the highest priority projects. And my suggestion is you minimize these so that the maximum number of projects that somebody is focused on at one time is 3. Really, the brain, and you'd have to test this with different people. Some people can only handle one at a time, and then they get into overload. But the whole idea is you're setting a number where it's least likely for the person to go into cognitive overload and overwhelm. That's what we're trying to prevent, okay? So my suggestion is try 3, and if that's too much, move it down to 2. I only have a max of 3 projects at a time. Kelly can only have a maximum of 3 projects at a time on her plate. If there's more than 3, we have to prioritize, and one of the projects gets moved back to the holding tank. It just gets put on pause. So there is a trade-off, but it's really important trade-off because what actually happens is you make progress faster because you have fewer things that your brain is like working on. And so you get through them faster. And at the end of the day, the whole bucket of projects will get done faster, even though we're constraining the ones that we're working on at one time. So think about constraint. If you have people that have like 5 or 6 or 7 priority projects, it's probably too much. Even though you're not trying to do this, you're probably making the situation created inside your organization where things are taking way longer than they need to. Okay. The other thing that I love about this is something that I've talked a lot about on this podcast, and it's advanced decision making. So this is the idea of planning and scheduling. So when you're faced with complex projects, breaking them down into smaller, more manageable tasks, again, has the effect of reducing cognitive overload and preventing overwhelm. If you think about like a big project right now that we are working on is a new funnel, and this is the most extensive funnel that I have ever built. So I am taking a good amount of time to get all the deliverables in the funnel done. I've given myself a good 30 days to create all of that content. And if I just looked at all of the offers, I think there's like 10 of them in there, maybe. Maybe not quite so much. Maybe it's like 6. Anyways, it's too many for my brain. My brain would just go like, there's no way, right? Too much, too much, too much. I don't have enough time, all that. But what I did inside of my Asana board is I took each one of the offers and I broke them down into their component parts. So now if you looked at my Asana board, and this is my one main project, this is the highest priority project that I have right at the moment, it has like probably 25 tasks in it, subtasks in it. But all I do is I go in and I look at a single task and I schedule that out. And then it makes it so much easier for my brain to be able to handle this. I know when I've gone into cognitive overload. And if you're really paying attention to yourself, you probably know when that happens for you too. So the idea of making this easier by breaking things down into smaller, more manageable tasks or steps reduces decision fatigue and nudges you towards making progress. You will make faster progress because you won't stall out in overwhelm and overload. You'll just be taking one little step at a time and knocking those off. And that will actually be faster in the long run than having a huge thing, looking at it, every time you look at it, it's so overwhelming, you just ignore it and it gets punted to next week and the next week and the next week, right? This is where procrastination happens a lot of times. So those are two ways of thinking about your workflows, where one workflow might be, okay, everybody has 3 maximum projects that they're working on at a time. Another workflow might be, all of the projects are broken down into their smaller subtasks, okay? Let's also talk about defaults. Defaults are super powerful nudges. They take advantage of our humanness, our subconscious tendency to stick with preset options. And so by setting the default options to those that promote productivity and deep work, you can actually shape behavior through workflows towards more desired outcomes. Let me give you a couple of examples for this. So one thing could be to preset deep work times, okay? Focused work times. So you could say, okay, of your work week, here's what the expectation is that you identify, number one, when your peak pockets of productivity are, and that you set those times for yourself. And during those times, you have email off, you have Slack off, you're doing nothing but working on those 3 high priority projects. Okay, that could be a default that you set. That is an expectation that you set up in your business. And guess what happens? You're going to get people achieving things faster and easier, and you're going to be moving through projects at lightning speed. Another thing that you can do is something simple like templates. Using templates for projects or tasks, right? You can create templates for repetitive tasks and projects with built-in timeframes and checklists. So instead of asking for somebody to start something brand new inside the workflow, you would have an already like this, the tasks would be created inside of that workflow, the subtasks. And within each subtask, you might have a template or you might have a checklist or something that would make that specific step basically, I don't like this word, but it would make it so that you could not make a mistake. Okay. You just need to follow this. This is the outline. This is the framework. These are the things we expect. And again, like the idea of this is to reduce the amount of communication about the project that is needed, because all of that communication is already built into the workflow. Okay. So I see this idea of templates being used a lot. One way that we love to use templates inside of my business is whenever we create a new deliverable, there is just a pre-designed Canva template. And there's like maybe three different options. And we just take the content and we plunk it into that template. So we're not spending a ton of time in the design phase, right? Everything that we do is based on our brand guidelines. So the colors, the font type, the font size, all of that already predetermined. And we're just copying and pasting the content into those templates. So preset deep work times, the expectation for that, that default alone could easily like double the performance of people on your team. And then templates and checklists are great ideas. Okay, the next type of nudge that I want to cover here and just give you a couple of examples is expecting error. The principle of expecting error really involves designing workflows that anticipate and mitigate human mistakes. Okay, I know that if you have teams that you are leading or managing, you went and you interviewed and you hired an employee for a specific role, or at least that's what you thought you were getting. What you ended up with was a human, right? All of us are human. We all make mistakes. We all relegate some of our decisions or a lot of our decisions to the subconscious brain. And the subconscious brain has rules of thumb and shortcuts that it uses to make decisions. And not always are those decisions the most effective, right? In terms of creating the results that we want. So how can we expect errors that people are going to make and build solutions for those into our workflows? I don't know if you knew this before, but you know, when you get in your car, let's say you go to the gas station and you fill up, and of course you take your seatbelt off to go get the gas, and then you get back in your car. And if you drive off and you forget to put your seatbelt on, guess what happens? Ding, 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 ding. It's the most annoying dinging noise happens, right? And then you're immediately like, oh yeah, I forgot to put my seatbelt on. And so you put it on. And as soon as you click it and snap it into place, that alarm goes off. That was built in there on purpose because car manufacturers knew we as humans were going to make mistakes. We're going to get busy getting gas, and then we're checking our phone, and then we drive off and we forget to put our seatbelt on. That's the correction for that, right? The same thing happens with, I didn't know this. I used to have this fear that I would go to the gas station. I don't know why. I never did this, but I would, instead of putting the regular gasoline in, I would put the diesel gasoline in and I would like ruin my engine. It's completely irrational fear. I never did it. I don't even know anybody who's done it. But for whatever reason, it was always something I was worried about. But you know what's so cool is people have done this, and the gas manufacturers or the, I don't even know if it's the whatever, they have already pre-planned for us making that mistake. And guess what happens? The size of the nozzle for the diesel is not the size of the nozzle that will fit in a typical car gas tank. It's too big. So they have prevented that from happening. They're expecting that error and they set up a system where you couldn't actually even do that. So there's all of these, now that I'm saying this expecting error, you'll see in all of these different ways how manufacturers of things, of products and services have already thought through the errors that we might make and they have corrected them for us, which is super cool. Okay, so how can we use this in our workflows? So one thing that we can do is create something like a mistake-proof checklist. So develop checklists for complex tasks that include common pitfalls to watch out for. What this does is it proactively helps you and or your team, whoever's using it, to easily avoid errors, most common errors. Something that I have talked about a lot on this podcast is something that I don't use this so much anymore, but when I was first figuring out how to plan and schedule time and be able to execute on that plan in the way that I scheduled it, is putting in some overflow time. like a buffer time block into my weekly schedule. And I did this for a long time. And so you can do that, right? So if you're asking your team to do this where, or you're asking yourself to create a schedule for yourself or plan your time out, when you're first new at this, oftentimes we're not very good at it because we're not good at estimating time. We don't think about what our skill level is in certain things. And based on that skill level, how accurate we're going to schedule or inaccurate we're going to schedule, and planning fallacy. And I went through like the four things that can easily derail planning in another episode. So one of the things you can do to counteract that or to expect that error to happen is to put in basically a contingency time slot each week. Incorrect planning or inefficient planning or unforeseen tasks. I've seen this with lots of leaders. Actually, some of the people on their executive team had the error happen multiple times where they didn't plan for a new idea somebody had thought about or a leader thought about, and the leader wanted them to implement it that week, which I have some thoughts about. But anyways, let's just stay with this contingency time. Or maybe we forgot about something that was going to have to be done this week. So we can plan for those kinds of errors with this contingency time block. It's like all the crap that didn't go the way that I planned it to go gets put into this time block. And the way that I used to do it was I would put this on my time, on my schedule for like Friday, either in the morning or in the afternoon. And I knew I wasn't going to want to work then. And so it was also sort of a negative consequence that I didn't want to have. And so I did my best to try and not have to use that. And I don't have that anymore. But the reason that I don't is because I have spent, I think I'm on like year 13 of planning my time. So I'm really pretty good at it at this point, as I should be, right? I should be pretty masterful at knowing how to plan my time and doing it with a fairly high level of accuracy, I would say. Okay. So that's another thing you can do is schedule contingency time blocks to take care of unforeseen tasks or to correct errors that you didn't really think about when you were making your plan. So what that does is that built-in flexibility helps manage unexpected issues without disrupting your workflow or throwing your entire calendar and plan out the window and deciding that planning doesn't work for me. Okay, those are some examples of expecting error. That's one of my favorite ones. Now, the last thing that I'm going to offer up to you here is feedback. Feedback is really how we learn. I know that there are people who get really triggered by getting feedback. That was me for a long time until I kind of shifted my mindset around, this is actually making me better. I just decided that this person loves me enough, cares about me enough, that they're willing to give me this feedback because they want to increase my performance. They want to help me increase my performance. So that's the way that I think about it. And I now know this from reading a lot of studies on learning. It is the way we learn best, by doing something, getting some immediate feedback, and then correcting our performance on it so that we're actually fixing whatever weakness or whatever way that we didn't meet expectations so that we're better next time we do it. Okay. So we know that feedback is tough, right? Because it requires time and energy. And so what's cool is now we have the ability to use AI-assisted feedback. And one of the ways that I've started doing this, I'm just going to offer it up to you and just to give you some ideas for you to be thinking about, is programming custom GPTs. So for instance, one thing that you can do is program a custom GPT, let's say for a customer service representative. I've seen this done a couple different ways. So you can take frequently asked questions, you can put them into like a spreadsheet, and then you can program that spreadsheet into the GPT. And then you can have your customer service rep just copy the email, the question in the email, paste it into the custom GPT, and ask the GPT to respond based on the responses of frequently asked questions inside of that spreadsheet. Super cool, right? Another way you can use a custom GPT for this is to help people analyze their tone and voice. So if you have someone who is responding to emails in the way that is not as friendly or is not as supportive as you want them to, you can help them correct that tone and voice by programming a GPT that analyzes the tone and voice of it and asks them to rewrite it in a more friendly, supportive tone, for example. Okay. Super cool, right? So there's so many ways that you can create custom GPTs to give people on your team immediate feedback based on predetermined metrics or certain things that you want to make sure that are happening. I want you to just be thinking about that in your own mind about how you can maybe use some of these nudges, the defaults and expecting error and feedback to make your workflows more efficient. So I think one way that I would have you maybe consider this, because again, I don't want you to get into cognitive overload and overwhelm. This could be something like where you pick one workflow. Okay. So maybe you pick something that is, you know, on your mind right now, or something that you feel like is just super inefficient where you're just getting like a million questions, and you use that workflow as your example. And so you start to think about, how could I make this more effective? And the target here is that people can go through this workflow, get their work done without spending a lot of time communicating and asking about how to do things. The workflow is designed to answer those questions. So what errors are they making? Let's set up a solution inside the workflow. What feedback do they need so that the quality of the work that they are sending off to the next stage is the quality that you expect? Is there a way to program this into an AI tool to help you? What defaults can we set up to make sure that they are doing their best work, right? How can we set up defaults to do our best to make sure that they're not cognitively overloaded, that they're not in overwhelm, because we know that's going to ruin their performance. So these are some of the things that I want you to be thinking about in preparation for next week's episode. So here's my suggestion. Pick one workflow right now. Think about the things that we talked about here, and then bring that with you to next week's episode, where Rick goes even deeper into how we can use AI tools, not just ChatGPT, but ChatGPT in conjunction with some other really effective tools like Zapier to make our workflows faster and more efficient. I'll see you next week in the next episode of Success Genius Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Success Genius. I truly hope you found the content valuable and inspiring. My mission with Success Genius is to provide you, the ambitious entrepreneur, with the tools, strategies, and mindsets necessary for achieving success in a healthy and sustainable way. I'm dedicated to helping you balance your entrepreneurial aspirations with a vibrant and fulfilling life and lifestyle. If you found value in today's episode, here's how you can support this mission. Subscribe to Success Genius. By subscribing, you'll have all of our latest episodes and insights right at your fingertips. Leave us a rating and review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. It helps us improve, and it helps fellow entrepreneurs find our show. Let's grow this community of success geniuses together. And share the episode with a friend, colleague, or loved one. If you think today's episode could help someone you know, please don't hesitate to share it. The ripple effect of knowledge can have a powerful impact. As we conclude this episode, remember that as entrepreneurs, we're all on this journey together. Supporting each other's growth and well-being is one of the most significant ways we can achieve greatness. I know how very valuable your time and attention is, so I want to thank you for spending some of it today with me and this show. Together, we can spread the message of healthy success to our kids, our friends, our neighbors, and our communities. Thank you for being a part of this. I couldn't do it without you.